So let your colors run tonight. We're painting in the dark. Let your colors run tonight. The colors of your heart.
Hey guys, and welcome to Catchy Lefty, your weekly podcast where we cover a passage out of the lectionary with a theme from a group of pastors. My name is Patrick Engel, and I'm joined today by Jonathan Spring and Chris Patton. How are you guys doing today?
Doing good.
Great.
Sweet. Well, we are going to be covering Easter. Believe it or not, Easter is at the end of the month in March. And so we're going to talk about the theme of Eastertide, followed up by the gospel reading of John, chapter 20, verses 1 through 18. So Easter.
Yes.
We're finishing Lent with our dead weight and system failure. Jonathan, I know that you and your church have been doing the system failure. How's that been going for you guys?
It's been really good. It's been really helpful. I was just telling Chris that we've got a lot of good feedback from people, because I think, you know, these are things that are on people's heart, that weigh on people, but they don't know how to voice it. They don't know how to call it out. And so the fact that we're calling it out, that we're speaking on it, has really helped them grasp and process what they could do about it. So it's been good.
Awesome. And Chris, how's the Dead Weight series been going for your church?
It has been going well, kind of helping people think through things in a way they haven't thought about them before, especially kind of as dead weight that you keep carrying around. So that metaphor and imagery is working really well for us.
Yeah, I found that imagery is just actually a really good imagery and beautiful imagery for just talking about these, whether they be symptoms of a larger issue or whether they be the larger issue themselves. I had a horrible Sunday this past Sunday. I wish we were taking communion still during that, so that we could gather around the table and feel somewhat redeemed, but I just bombed.
Oh, man.
Luckily, only half my congregation was there, so only half of them got to experience the effects.
Okay, have you been able to pinpoint what it is that threw you off?
I think it was just a hard week for me.
Gotcha.
And we all have them. I wasn't able to put a lot of time into the sermon prep that I wanted to.
Yeah.
Plus, it was just Joshua, and Joshua itself is a hard chapter,
mm-hmm.
or a hard book of the Bible for me.
Yeah.
For a lot of reasons. But.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're coming out of Lent and we're going into Eastertide, and you've already made some sweet graphics for us, Jonathan, and I have those up on the website. So if anybody wants to use those, as always, you are free and welcome to take them.
Yeah, the title of the series is Identity Crisis, and we're going to be basically looking at the church and the church trying to find its identity, and how we have a crisis of identity in the church even now, but it's not the first time that it's happened. So we'll be looking at throughout the series, we've talked about joining the John passages with the Revelation passages after we get through Easter Sunday. We kind of kick into that. And so reading the passages of Jesus's kind of exhortation towards his disciples, but then also pairing it with his exhortation towards the churches, has been really beneficial. As we've been doing some planning over here at Catalyst, it's been really fun, because to see them side by side, it kind of helps you frame the John passage in a different light. And so the image of the graphics are that a mirror that is broken by a nail. I was doing a Google search and just found this picture of a guy that had nailed a mirror to the wall just to be cool, like have some kind of artistic expression. And I thought that was a really good image for what we're trying to do, is that we're trying to look in the mirror to try and figure out who we are as the church, but who we are is fragmented, because it looks distorted, because we're looking through something that is broken, in the same way that Christ's broken body is the symbol of who we're supposed to be as the church. So when we're trying to see that crystal clear image, we're missing it. So because the brokenness of Christ is the symbol for us of who we're supposed to be as a church, you know, it kind of works out. So I think it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I think the graphics are great, and I think you did a good job on that. And I think it fits really well with just the whole idea of us having an identity crisis. And that's what I really like about, I mean, this text on Easter Day from John chapter 20 works really well just with going into the whole series of who are we supposed to be in light of the resurrection? Like, what's the call of the body of Christ? When Peter and the disciple don't even realize what happened to Jesus, and when Mary confuses Jesus with the gardener, like she doesn't even recognize who he is after the resurrection. And so for us as the church, you know, what is our identity, and where do we go in light of this good news and in light of this gospel, and what does that mean for us? And then we get into Revelation, which is just it's going to be tricky, to say the least, because there's so many preconceived notions about what the book of Revelation means. Yeah. But I think if any book of the Bible describes well who we should be as the people known as Christians or Christ followers, Revelation does a good job of who do we align ourselves with.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
And it does cause confusion because we have so many other identities that we're trying to balance.
Yep.
It's interesting to be going through these texts in the middle of an election season, I think.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, I was hoping somebody else was going to say that. I say too much already on these podcasts. I think the book of Revelation is perfect for this election season. Are we going to have an identity of the Lamb, or are we going to hold the identity of the empire?
Yeah. And what's interesting, too, is that even as we get into the actual text in Revelation, these are not the ones that were actually chosen for in the lectionary are not the really difficult ones. They cut out a lot of the hard passages or the hard sections and just give us something fairly simple to be able to interpret. And so it actually bummed JR out when we started looking at them. He's like, man, these aren't even the fun passages.
Yeah, I was actually kind of thankful for that.
Yeah.
If I had to be honest. Cool. Yeah. Well, let's jump into John chapter 20 for Easter Day. Chris, do you want to read that for us?
Yeah, so it's John chapter 20, verses 1 through 18. And I'm going to be reading out of the New Revised Standard. So it says, early on the first day of the week, while it was still dark, Mary Magdalene came to the tomb and saw that the stone had been removed from the tomb. So she ran and went to Simon Peter and the other disciple, the one whom Jesus loved, and said to them, "They have taken the Lord out of the tomb, and we do not know where they have laid him." Then Peter and the other disciples set out and went toward the tomb. The two were running together, but the other disciple outran Peter and reached the tomb first. He bent down to look in and saw the linen wrappings lying there, but he did not go in. Then Simon Peter came following him and went into the tomb. He saw the linen wrappings lying there and the cloth that had been on Jesus' head, not lying with the linen wrappings, but rolled up in a place by itself. Then the other disciple, who reached the tomb first, also went in, and he saw and believed. For as yet they did not understand the scripture that he must rise from the dead. Then the disciples returned to their homes. But Mary stood weeping outside the tomb. As she wept, she bent over to look into the tomb, and she saw two angels in white sitting where the body of Jesus had been lying, one at the head and the other at the feet. They said to her, "Woman, why are you weeping?" She said to them, "They have taken away my Lord, and I do not know where they have laid him." When she had said this, she turned around and saw Jesus standing there, but she did not know that it was Jesus. Jesus said to her, "Woman, why are you weeping? Whom are you looking for?" Supposing him to be the gardener, she said to him, "Sir, if you have carried him away, tell me where you have laid him, and I will take him away." Jesus said to her, "Mary," and she turned and said to him in Hebrew, "Rabboni," which means teacher. Jesus said to her, "Do not hold on to me, because I have not yet ascended to the Father, but go to my brothers and say to them, 'I am ascending to my Father and your Father, to my God and your God.'" Mary Magdalene went and announced to the disciples, "I have seen the Lord," and she told them that he had said these things to her. The word of the Lord.
Great. Thanks, Chris, for reading that. So this is a pretty long passage with a couple sections in this scene. So I think it's best as we talk about this just to kind of talk about what we're emphasizing, because you could emphasize a lot of different perspectives. So Jonathan, what are you guys going to be emphasizing out of this passage?
We're focusing in on the fact that Jesus being the gardener. There's an interesting connection there to the kind of the culmination of John's narrative, as he's talked about the thing that Jesus is doing through his miracles or through his signs and wonders as being these recreation moments, and that the resurrection was part of that. But and so this kind of idea that the God who was the one who walked with Adam and Eve in the garden is now standing before Mary. So just trying to connect this to the identity that we have in Jesus is as the one, the resurrected Jesus is also the one who is the Alpha and Omega, which we'll get into in the Revelation stuff. So,
cool. And Chris, what are you and Georgia going to be focusing on these out of these passages?
So right now we're kind of headed towards talking about that at the culmination of this text, and I'm talking specifically for Easter Sunday, this statement of Mary, this "I have seen the Lord," and just the sense of with this theme of identity crisis, I think we struggle so much with trying to define Christianity, trying to define who Jesus is. And so we really want to focus on this call to give testimony and bear witness. We simply point to what we've seen and what we have experienced. That's going to be a major part of our focus for this Sunday, especially with a lot of folk who come on Easter and they're not really there any other time of the year.
Yeah. That's kind of what we're going to be talking about, because the New Testament text is Acts 10, you know, which is that whole idea of Peter saying, "Now I truly understand that God shows no partiality." And that is where the idea of, like, where he even says, like, we are witnesses, we are martyrs of this good news. And so I'm going to bounce off of that whole idea of what it means to just be a witness to what God is doing around us, and that that doesn't necessarily mean that it's going to be an easy path, but it's actually going to be one filled with trials and questioning and trying to figure out and working out one's faith in the midst of unbelievable facts or maybe catastrophic situations like the death of your Lord. Type of thing.
Mm-hmm. I think one of the things for us, like we many times you look at Easter as this sort of hinge Sunday, where it's between Lent and Easter, and so we're calling back to the powers a little bit. The powers that basically the Jesus' death on the cross was the powers showing all that they could do, and that all that humanity fears is thrown at Jesus, including death, and that then Easter Sunday is the pronouncement by God that all the powers have to throw at us, they still can't hold us back. They still can't hold Jesus back. That so that we have nothing to fear.
And that actually is a really good bridge from the two themes that we've been doing for Lent into Easter. I like that a lot, like just addressing the powers in and of themselves and what they're doing, and maybe go at more towards that, like Christus Victor understanding.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Which a lot of people may not have heard if they're just visitors. They're just Easter goers.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. Anything else in this passage that kind of stands out to you? I think it's actually kind of, it's more of a comical passage than it is anything else. I mean, like, yeah, there's some good things and powerful things that come through this, but when you first read it about, like, Peter and the disciple, who's not named, but we all know that John's talking about, that whoever wrote this passage is talking about John the disciple, you know, the beloved one, and how they're racing towards each other, how they don't understand what Mary says, so they have to go in and look and see, and then they fail to see, and then Mary shows up, and you know she's weeping, and then she becomes the one who, like, she becomes the one who first sees Jesus in his risen form, and then becomes the first witness. Like, it's just really comical, and if you think about it.
Yeah, another thought I had was, you know, for those of you listening, we're recording this a few weeks before you'll probably listen to it, but today being Women's Day, it's interesting that, International Women's Day, it's interesting how all the gospel accounts really attribute the first seeing of Jesus' resurrection to the women, and that, of course, for the historical context, that would be unheard of because nobody would trust it if it was a woman in that day and age, and yet the gospel writers are clear that it was these women who were coming to see the tomb, and they're in awe of his resurrection, and they have to go tell the men, and the men, of course, don't really believe her, and they run. Yeah, not that that's really the case. I mean, it may not be exactly the case, but you could definitely interpret it that way, that they have to see for themselves, you know.
Yeah, seriously. Well, and then also the just what was released by the Vatican a couple days ago, that portico or whatever, that paintings, those like second century paintings of like a group of women gathered around the Eucharist, and then like a woman dressed as a priest.
Mm-hmm.
Did you guys hear about that?
I didn't, but that sounds very interesting.
Did you hear about that, Chris?
I did hear about it. That's pretty, I'm surprised they released that part of the Vatican.
Yeah, I really am. One, they're saying that like what looks to be like a feast is more of a funeral, and then like what appears to be a woman praying as a priest is just a woman praying. So it's kind of interesting, but still, I mean, then here we are, Women's Day, and this about to read this passage out of John, with Mary as being the first witness.
Yeah.
So just some interesting thoughts to keep in the back of your mind as you're forming this sermon.
For sure.
And delivering it.
As I'm thinking through the series we're doing, I always think that especially Easter, when we deal with the text seriously, it always causes identity crisis within our preconceived ideas of what Christianity is about or should be about. So, like, there was an article somewhere this week that said so many evangelicals are attracted to particular presidential candidates because their leadership style is very much like a lot of evangelical leaders and pastors. So authoritarian, very confident, male, and you read a text like this text, and it just completely throws those particular ideas and ideals on their head when you're confronted with the ways that Jesus shows up even after the resurrection to a woman, and then John to Mary Magdalene.
The prostitute.
Right, someone who is a lesser, who would be considered even lesser than just a woman who is a mother. And it just... So I'm thinking about this text in the context of how do we identify as Christians so often, and how does this text throw those identities into a little bit of crisis?
Right. Well, I'm of the conviction that you're not preaching the gospel if it doesn't at least convict you or to throw some of your perspectives into crisis and your congregation's perspectives into crisis as well. I mean, so a good question to be asking as you prepare to preach this text is, what is it about your perspectives of the world that need to be altered in light of the resurrection? Like, what does that mean?
Yeah.
Like, maybe you do have some prejudices or some biases, or maybe the way that you portray yourself is not in line with the way that Jesus portrayed himself in these passages. Because let's be honest, it's easier to be charismatic and suave and authoritarian than it is to lead as a servant.
Yeah, and I think if you were able to bring that around into the Easter text and the Easter sermon, to just to prep your people and say, hey, we're going to be looking at this very, very, distinctly as we go through this series. These 8 weeks we're going to spend looking at the church as Jesus called it to be the church, looking at his body broken as an example for us. So how is that going to change the way that we see the church or the way that we're acting as the church? So let's take seriously this call of Christ to be his broken body, to be a lamb slaughtered.
Yeah. Cool. Hey, well, thanks, guys, for joining today.
Absolutely. It's been fun.
Yeah, it has been fun. Let's do this again.
Maybe next week?
Maybe next week. Thanks, everyone, for listening. You can check us out at catchylecti.com or on Facebook at catchylecti.com/facebook.com. Did I get that right, Jonathan?
It's facebook.com/catchylecti, but yeah.
Okay. facebook.com/catchylecti.
There we go.
You can find me at faithcommunitynaz.church or on Twitter at Patrick Glenn. Jonathan, where can they find you guys at?
Yeah, you can find us at catrow.org and check out all of our sermons there. And you can follow me on Twitter at IamSpraying.
And Chris?
You can find our church, George and I's church, at cfcn.org. And we're on Facebook, and my Twitter handle is CRPOK. Those are the letters.
Well, thanks, guys. Grace and peace to you.